Michigan Liberation is a statewide network of people and organizations organizing to end the criminalization of Black families and communities of color in Michigan. We envision a state without mass incarceration, mass policing, and punishment. We envision a state with the best public education in the nation, single-payer health care, and thriving Black and brown communities. Here on the Respect the Rules podcast, we will lift up the stories and experiences of those impacted by mass incarceration, collective ties to the criminal legal system, and the frontline efforts to end mass incarceration.
What's up, everybody? It's Ms. Marjan again for another episode of Respect the Roots, Michigan Liberation's podcast. Today is going to be a special, special episode. I've got in the studio with me Marvin Cotton Jr. and everything. He is the CEO of Better Not Broken. What's up, Marvin? What's happening?
Hey, how you doing? I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Hey, I'm so glad. This brother been putting up with all my emails, y'all. You know how we do. But, you know, everybody, I don't like, when I podcast, I don't like to do interviews. So Marvin is family. He's part of the My Lib family, just like so many of you are and everything. But, man, we got his book. He's got his book with him. Man, Better Not Broken. Marvin, I'm not even going to waste no time, nobody's time. Let's go straight in. I want you to tell everybody your story, because I can't tell your story like you can tell your story, my brother.
Well, I was most certainly impacted by the criminal justice system here in Michigan. I served 19 years, 7 months, and 12 days. I was sentenced to a natural life sentence without the possibility of parole. I was arrested in 2001, went to trial in the same year, and was convicted in the same year. And I was exonerated nearly 20 years later after I was able to establish my innocence. The Wayne County Prosecutor Office reopened my case. They reinvestigated my case, and they took the lead on actually getting me out of prison. It's called the Conviction Integrity Unit right here in Wayne County. It's headed up by Valerie Newman. She's the director, and Kim Worthy is the prosecutor here in Wayne County. And, you know, during my time in prison, I was, of course, able to see so much that inspired me to get into the work that Michigan Lib do out here every day.
Yeah.
So I'm very honored to be here. You know, I've done a lot of podcasts. I've done a lot of shows, but this is extra special because I know the roots of this show come from, you know, Michigan Lib. It's good to be here.
Right. We family.
It is most certainly good to be here.
Wow. Now, Marvin, you said you were exonerated. Explain, because some people may not understand what that means. Break it down for us.
Trust me, I get it. You know, I tell somebody I've been exonerated, and sometimes they say, well, you know, stay out of trouble. I wasn't in trouble to begin with. I went to prison for something I didn't do. So to be exonerated means to be able to establish your innocence. And to be exonerated means that they attempt to wipe the blemish that should have never been there to begin with from you. And a part of that is being released. I do not believe that the system go far enough. And, you know, with their exonerations, not only in the extent that it has an impact on the individual, but I think it should be more exonerations. There's a lot of innocent people, I believe, that's still trapped behind prison walls.
Wow. So, So explain to us, you know, or tell us, should I say, while you was in prison, what did you get into? What, you know, you're in prison, you're serving your time. What all did you partake in? Because I think some people, we only go off what we see on TV.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, TV don't get it all wrong. there's most certainly some TV moments, a part of every day in there. But what people don't see is the brilliance that's in prison.
Wow.
You know, the man that I am today is not the man that walked into prison. I went in as a 21-year-old kid, a functional illiterate that, you know, had trauma from childhood, trauma from the neighborhood, trauma from the criminal justice system entering prison. So I went in as a young male and I walked out as a man, but as from a result of the brilliant people that's in prison. So, mm-hmm. You know, at Michigan Liberation, you got Nick Buckingham.
Right.
Well, brilliant.
Yeah, shout out to Nick. What
absolutely. Brilliant.
Executive directors.
Can you even imagine someone like that being trapped in prison? You can't even imagine it, you know. And it's so many Nicks in prison that most likely will never see outside of prison because of mass incarceration and being over-sentenced and some being innocent like myself. So not only did I grow as a result of the men that I met in there from debating and arguing and being taught and being given books by these men, being taught the lessons that it took them 20, 30, 40 years to learn, and they gave to me over a course of walking the prison yard with them.
Right, right.
Some of them would never, according to the way things are now, never see the light of day. And that's why I do the work that I do. That brilliance, I believe, is the answer to a lot of the problems we suffer in society right now. And you can see it in the work that's being done with Michigan Liberation and,
right,
and,
right.
and the many great men and women that's a part of that organization.
All right. So I know you got your book out, you know, Better Not Broken. And I know, you can't give us all the juice because, you know, we want people to go out.
You got to buy the book.
but Marvin, let's dig a little bit into it. You know, what made you, because everybody's not writing a book when they get exonerated or, you know, they not coming out with a book, you know. And so tell me the story behind, you know, writing this book and so forth.
Yeah, there's a lot. Everyone has a story.
Right.
Not everyone know how to tell their story, but everyone has a story that's worth investing in and buying and really pursuing. So everyone has a story, but sometimes getting past the trauma of what you've been through in order to write that story stops a lot of us from telling our story. Writing this book was very difficult.
Wow.
I originally wrote the book. And a week before I released it, I deleted 80% of it.
What?
I deleted 80%.
Why?
I sat in front of my laptop and I just deleted page after page after page because I felt that I wasn't being open enough.
Right.
I really wanted people to have a raw experience of what I've been through and how I think and how I was experiencing the moments that I had in prison. So I rewrote 80% of what you have right here.
Right.
Like in 4 days, and I cried the whole time. So I knew that I was really giving the readers what they would need to really read because it was affecting me to the point that I knew it would affect the readers.
Wow. And let me tell everybody, it is basically, hey, I got to give you your props, 16 chapters. Nice font. Thank you, Marvin, because I've interviewed some people where it's so tiny. I tell them it's going to take a while to get through this, baby.
When I wrote it, I thought about everyone. But most of all, I thought about the men and women that's in prison throughout the country that will be trying to read my book when they shut the lights out.
Wow.
So I picked a bigger font. In order to make sure that I accommodate people that's reading my books with the moonlight.
Right.
And I wanted, you know, elders and people that may have trouble with their sight. I didn't want anybody to be left out of my experience.
Right.
You know, so it's a self-help book.
Yeah.
It's a self-help book, but I wrote it like an autobiography because I wanted people to walk with me and see and feel what I was seeing and feeling. So I wrote it like that for a reason. But at the end of each chapter, it's interactive. I give my perspective of the story that I share in every chapter.
Right.
But I wrote it like that because I really wanted people to experience it.
Right. Now, Marvin, let's spend a couple of minutes because I want to spend the next half of this interview or conversation. I don't do interviews, y'all. Conversation to talk about what you're doing now that you got your book out and you're out here, you know, talking to the masses. Okay, 19 years. Explain to us, like, the weeks leading up to you being let out into what was that? You know, because
weeks before my release, I didn't
months or whatever.
I didn't find out that I was getting out until 4 days before I walked out.
Wait, say that again.
4 days. So I had a 4-day notice. Being exonerated is different than, you know, getting out from parole. Parole, you years before you go see the parole board, you know when you're going to see him.
Kind of.
Absolutely.
Prepping for it and everything.
And then they give you notice several months before you walk out the door. So most people that get out on parole, they know several months in advance. Well, you being exonerated, especially when your case is in the hands of somebody, when they make a decision, they move quickly to get you out of prison. So I found out Sunday that I was going home Thursday. You know,
wow.
So that day I was on the yard working out, and I had a pretty mean workout routine.
Yeah, you was full. I had to
because that's what gave me balance.
Right.
It helped burn off that negative energy, kept me in shape, kept me combat ready. And I just came back from a workout, so I was still like in that war mode. I walked in the unit. I was going for the shower, and something told me, call home.
Mm.
So I picked up the phone. I was getting ready to walk past. I picked up the phone and called my mother. And as soon as she got on the phone, she was like, it's over. I was like, what are you talking about? She said, well, your attorney called, and she said, it's over. I was like, hold up. So I got off the phone with my mother and called my daughter, because my daughter, my daughter's a straight shooter. She don't add nothing.
Straight at
you. If you want an answer from her, you ask her a specific question, she's going to give you a specific answer. She's not going to add or take anything away from it. She's going to shoot straight down the middle. So I called my daughter, and, you know, my daughter didn't tell me right off. I was like, how you doing? She was like, I'm good. She was like, how you doing? I said, I'm all right. I said, you got something you want to tell me? She was like, well, your attorney said you ain't supposed to. No.
Wait.
Yeah.
This was like, surprise.
Right. So I guess my attorney wanted to call up to the prison and let me know herself. But she called my family, the two people that would probably have been impacted the most by my incarceration. But my daughter told me that was a fact. And, you know, I said, okay. So my attorney called the next day, and it got a little more realer for me.
Mm.
And then over the next couple of days, it was starting to sink in a little bit, but the paranoia came, because I'm like, well, what if something happened? So now I'm trying to, like, I'm waiting till Thursday, but waiting till Thursday seemed like an eternity.
I bet it did.
Yeah. But it moved pretty quickly after that. Thursday came, I went to court via Zoom. It is on YouTube.
Walk us through it. So it's Thursday.
Yeah.
You waking up. What's that? What does that look like? Are you cleaning up the area you were in?
And yes. When I found out, I immediately started giving away stuff, giving away my property to other prisoners and leaving stuff
Say
that I wouldn't
goodbye.
Take home. Absolutely. And you can't really imagine this unless you've been through this, but you go through a grief process because you're losing, you're leaving people that you've built relationships with and friendships with and brotherhood with. And I'm leaving and I'm looking at these happy faces, but it's sadness there. I spent 49% of my life in prison. And I've saved lives in prison. I've worked with some of these other guys in there to save lives in prison. I've sent men home better than they was, just like I left out better than I was. So, you're leaving it and it has an effect on you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, if you're just tuning in, I am talking to none other than Marvin Cotton Jr. He's the CEO of Better, Not Broken. Marvin did, 19? I saw this. You broke it down right here in the beginning of your book, 19 years, right? And some change.
Yeah,
seven months and 12 days. Man.
That change add up.
And he definitely doesn't look like what he's been through. And so now, in this part of our conversation, Marvin, I want to talk about life afterwards, life after lockup, because, you know, you've done this 19 plus years inside, you know, this facility. What was life after Thursday? What was life like?
Oh, wow. Another thing that a lot of my brothers don't really speak about, because you have people that recidivate, they get out of prison, they come back.
Speak on that. Wait a minute. Marvin, what's that called again?
Recidivism.
Right. Y'all got that because you know some people are a little slow. Say it again, Marvin.
Recidivism.
Right.
Some people, they get out of prison and sometimes the opportunities are not there. Sometimes the trauma is there and you don't deal with some issues. You're gonna hit your head. And that happens a lot. And organizations like the ones that I work for and work with in Michigan Live, we try to do things to make sure that people are coming home from prison to opportunities.
Yes.
But when they come back, one thing they don't talk about is the profound numbness that you feel after going through the trauma of prison when you get out. So
speak on that, Marvin.
I was at war year after year in prison. And when you're in a fight, sometimes you don't feel the blows until the fight is over. So when I walked out the door, I felt all of the trauma and the blows from all of the years of fighting. And I walked out and I felt numb. My eyesight, my ears, everything, my emotions, everything was numb. And I wasn't expecting that because when people come back to prison, they don't talk about that. So that was like the first thing I experienced. Everybody was happy to see me and people crying.
Having it was parties, like, get-togethers, right?
I didn't do parties or get-together. I didn't want that.
Okay.
That was too much. And most people that do a lot of time in prison, they really don't want that.
Wow.
Because those environments are so different from where we just spent all this time that you really can't enjoy it. You can't relax. You can't relax in them environments.
You know,
you're still putting your back against the wall at your grandmother's house.
Why?
You know, because you've been doing it for so many years in prison. But those things are not really talked about because they are attached to so much trauma that we're not out here just talking about it. But that profound numbness is it really covered me for about a year. Even though I was highly functional, I got out and got straight to the work and started building a life for myself. No one outside of me knew it, but I can feel it.
Right.
People were excited to see me, and I couldn't empathize with them. I couldn't, so I found myself really pretending to be happy. People was happy to see me, and I didn't want to look like the weird guy that just did all this time in prison. So I was mimicking what I seen, so that people wouldn't say, look at him, something wrong with him.
Wow.
You know.
Now, Marvin, we got about 10 minutes, but I want you to also, besides your book, what else have you been doing? Because I know, like you said, and I'm so glad you made it very clear the things that you didn't do. You didn't party. I've heard that. Some people say, I didn't even hang out with the people I used to hang out with. I had to change my circle.
Absolutely.
You know, my village started to look a little different. So
oh, yeah.
I know what you've been doing. I want everybody to hear from your mouth what you've been involved in since you've been out. Well, first of all, how long has it been?
Well, I've been out a little over 3 years now. I got out October 1st, 2020.
Okay.
So since when I got out immediately, I got off into criminal justice reform, activism, social justice issues, anything that I felt the impact from due to my wrongful conviction, I got involved in immediately.
Wow.
I got out and seen the conditions of things, and it really wasn't any time to sit back and relax or take some time off. Although, had I done so, I don't think many people would have had much to say. But I got out and got involved in the work. I co-founded the Organization of Exonerees.
Yes.
I still serve on the board of the Organization of Exonerees. I serve on about 9 different boards of organizations. Doing a lot of community violence intervention in the neighborhood in which I grew up with. Right now I'm training with Force Detroit, which is an amazing organization centered in the city of Detroit. And they're really adding and helping bring down the violence in the city of Detroit. And I'm learning from some of the best over there. You got Alea, Harvey Quinn over there. You have Zoe from over there on Joy Road. DeJuan, my brother DeJuan.
Joy Road, I know that's right.
And they're some of the best in the city when it comes to reducing violence and really, really connecting with the youth and those that's out there that's the most active. They have a gift in connecting with people, and I'm really trying to learn from that. You know, my old neighborhood, they love me. I'm still connected over there. So I want to bring those same things that I'm learning over here at Force Detroit to my old neighborhood because I owe that to my community to make it a safer and a better place.
Wow, Marvin. Well, you know, Marva, you've been doing, I'm just so proud of you and so amazed. I know at Michigan Live, we talk about you all the time, and we always cross some paths and everything. Marvin, so Better Not Broken, the CEO. I mean, how can people get in touch with you? Because, you know, as my grandma said, on that pewter, how can people get in touch with you?
You can follow me on Facebook, Marvin Cotton Jr. You can follow me on Instagram, the_real_FMC. I'm also Better Not Broken business pages on Facebook as well as Instagram. You can follow me on LinkedIn, and you know, you can Google my name. I know that sounds corny. You can Google me, but you can find my book. It's a bestseller. It's an Amazon bestseller, so you can find it on Amazon. You can order it, Better Not Broken.
All right, hold it up again, Marv. You know how the elders be like, hold it up so they can see that. Yeah.
You can most certainly order it on Amazon. You can reach out to me. I can send you a signed copy. I do signed copies, and I ship out books all the time to people. So I'm more than willing to do that.
Wow, Marv, that's what's up.
I'm not hard to find. I'm out here.
And he's always sharp, y'all. You know what I'm saying? Hey, I got to zoom in on that. He's always sharp and clean, as my grandma said. He's always sharp and clean. Wait, Barbara, you got to let him see that.
These my grocery store clothes.
That's Whole Foods. That ain't no Myers, y'all. But anyway, but Marvin, you know, I want us to spend the next, we got about 6 minutes, and we're doing great on time. And if you're just tuning in, you're late. But we've got Marvin Cotton Jr., you know, we got to put some respect on his name.
I appreciate that.
The CEO of Better Not Broken. Marvin did his time, but now he is out. And he is
I didn't do my time. I did somebody else's time.
I like that.
But I did do that time with honor. I carried myself a certain way in prison.
Right.
I made sure that I turned my prison cell into a university. I talk about that in my book on how I used that circumstance in order to become better, even though I wasn't supposed to be there.
Right. And you know, I'm glad you said that, because I just said he did his time, but you said, no, somebody else's time. Overall, how does that make you feel right now? Right now, as we sit here, real talk, how do you feel about doing somebody else's time? Because some people say, well, you know what, Marvin? Yeah. Things happen. It's time. No, you did somebody else's time. How does that make you feel overall?
I worked out a lot of the anger and bitterness while I was in prison. When I walked out of prison, you know, being in prison, especially for something you didn't do, it's like being buried alive.
Wow.
So, you know, I always describe it as being buried alive. Now, imagine being buried alive and then somebody pull you out of there. You're not worried about all of the mud and the dirt that's on your clothes. You're just happy you can breathe. And it being free, I wiped everybody's slates clear. Not the system, because the system has to be held accountable. Those that aided in my wrongful conviction has to be held accountable. But I understand that people are weak.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that we all have weaknesses and we all have strengths. And when you look at my case and you look at the different circumstances around my case, you can see that people's weaknesses were taken advantage of that led to my wrongful conviction. You know, some purposeful things that took place in my case. You can look it up. Like I said, you can Google me. You can check out other things that I've done, other news stories and things dealing with the case. You can find exoneration things online. But you can see what was done to me. But I left all of that in prison. It's hard to fight your way out of prison when you're trying to when you're looking through angry eyes. All of the angry and bitter people, unfortunately, are still trapped in prison because they can't see their way out. So I had to start working those things out of me. And I talk about that in my book. I talk about the different tools that I implemented in order to start working those things out of me.
Right.
And it started off unintentional. Then I got very intentional about the things that I started to do in order to prepare myself for the work that I'm doing now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what's up. And, you know, Marvin, another thing, you know, I learned this, and I think a lot of people need to know this. You know, there's certain things, like you corrected me about that, because some people say, oh, you did your time. You're like, no, I did somebody else's time. And then also being clear that, you know, not saying, like certain words, you don't say, oh, so you are ex-felony, you are an ex-convict and everything. And I want you to speak on that. There's other words that, you can refer, you know, say.
Words are powerful. And we have to be careful what we call ourselves, and we have to be careful what we call other people. The most powerful voice that you will ever hear is your own.
Right.
So if you're saying it about yourself, your actions and everything else is going to start to conform to your voice. Other people's voices are important, too, and if you hear it enough. So when I talk about the criminal justice system and those that have been affected by it, I refer to them as directly impacted. The justice system is not nowhere near what it should be. It's extremely flawed. It's many errors in there. And when you've been impacted by something that is so flawed as the criminal justice system here in America, it's not going to hit you right. It's going to create more damage than it would if it was the way that it's supposed to be.
Right.
So we're directly impacted by a system that needs to be fixed. So you can't look at somebody that's been impacted and then point a finger at them.
Right.
You know, even if they're guilty or they've done something wrong, the system is not right. So the system isn't even qualified to correct even a guilty person.
Right.
You know, also, you know, I want to give a shout out to Nation Outside. I'm the Detroit Regional Coordinator for Nation Outside.
Right.
And I work with some amazing people at Nation Outside. And what we do is we push policy to make sure that we're giving those that have been directly impacted by the criminal justice system an opportunity to fulfill and live out their best life. So we're constantly pushing policy, just like in Michigan Live. Michigan Live, our masters at pushing policy, and we do the same thing in Nation Outside.
That's what's up. Hey, we've got about a minute and a half, Marvin. What do you want to tell the masses that, you know, some food for thought, just something profound? You already said a lot of profound stuff.
Well, you know, what I would love to leave with those that are listening and watching is the criminal justice system is not going to fix itself.
Right.
And it's not on you to fix or anyone to fix everything, but we all can pitch in. We have to start holding the system accountable. We feed the system. We feed it with our tax dollars. We feed it with our nods. We feed it with our silence. Now we have to feed it with our voices and make sure that we're pushing policy that can help make things better in the criminal justice system.
Wow, you heard
it
here.
And we all can do something. We all can do something. If you don't know what you do, reach out to Michigan Liberation. Reach out to Nation Outside. Reach out to these organizations that's out here on the front line.
Yes. And that's a wrap right there, y'all. I don't even have to say anything else. Sometimes I'd be struggling, Marvin, but you did it. Thank you so much, my brother, from another mother, auntie, all that good stuff. Hey, respect the roots. Respect
Thank
the roots.
You. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Thank you.
Until next time, y'all, remember to respect the roots and check out Marvin Cotton Jr.'s book, Better Not Broken. Hey, I got mine right there. I'm gonna support this brother and everything. Until next time, y'all. Hey, take care, y'all.
Peace.
Michigan Liberation Education Fund, C3, conducts grassroots organizing, leadership development, and civic engagement activities. Michigan Liberation, C4, and Michigan Liberation Action Fund, IE, are sister organizations.